I'm a Lutheran pastor, and I'm from Chicago, and I'm here on the teaching staff this week. And one of the things that we talked about in terms of a possible forum topic had to do with what we could learn from art that would help us in our lives. And there's a couple reasons we kind of got to that place in terms of a topic. Some of it had to do with both, you know, several artists being kind of around this week. Some of it had to do with stories that I had been telling about what I call parallel processes between being creative as an artist and being creative as a person, you know, and kind of sharing some of those parallels. And some of it had to do, frankly, with some people feeling kind of stuck, like, couldn't we get a different perspective on things so that we could quit either arguing or disagreeing or, you know, feeling like we're not moving anywhere. And then the other reason it's phrased, the introductory kind of sentence is phrased the way it is to also encourage us to be concrete. You know, that there certainly will be a philosophical kind of edge to our forum, but it really is to encourage us to think how what we've gained from art has changed in some very specific ways, the way we approach work or our relationships or the way that we take care of ourselves. You know, anything that, like I said, has been some specific change that's occurred because of some insight that we've gained from the craft. What we've done is we've asked a couple people to, I don't know if panel might be too strong of a word, but to kind of lead us in some sharing about how they have used some insight from art in bringing about some change in their lives or how they've made that transition. These people will kind of start us on our way. And then we really hope it'll be an open kind of sharing process, because certainly there's many other people here who've had those experiences and made those applications. So the people that are here that are going to share. Maybe we'll move around this way, just in terms of setting some order. Sarah is here from the teaching staff, and Linda, and Barbara, and Lisa. Okay, I was looking for Lori, but and myself. We'll share some applications from our experience that have made a significant difference, and then other people, you know, our stories may trigger some other stories. For myself, I have two things that came to mind. The first time I made any connection between my craft and my life was when I was working for a potter in Madison, Wisconsin. I had been a group home parent for a number of years and really had a lot of difficulty at work. We had been there 6 months, and our boss tried to fire us at the end of the probationary period, and we ended up saving that job, but then after a while we quit. And so I had taken a summer off and took an apprenticeship with a potter who really has a big factory now, Jim Rowe, who has Rowe Pottery outside of Madison, Wisconsin. At that time, he was just moving up to Madison. And I would have to make 50 bowls. We used to call them jackpots. And I would make these, and at the end of the day, we would cut through them to see how thick they were. And then I'd have to rework them. And the next day I'd come back and I'd make another 50, and we'd cut through these and look about the thickness. And as I was reworking the clay, it began to dawn on me that that's the way I felt about my life at that time, that things really weren't working out, you know, that I had learned from this experience, but it felt destructive in that way. And that I began to feel like I was reworking my life. In the pottery context, I would say the forgiveness is in the ability to rework the clay, not in kind of evaluating, you know, whether it's good or bad, but in the fact that you can start over and learn from what you've experienced. For better or for worse, I've had several other times in my life where I feel like I'm back, you know, kneading that clay, kind of starting over. And pottery has helped me be willing to be surprised about what new thing might come out of a loss or a reworking, which has helped my anxiety tremendously. The other area is feels in some way somewhat more personal, but I think it's very important. The one thing that I learned in art, in pottery, really had to do with the value of touch and how kind of primary touch is. And I was in therapy at the time, and one of the things my therapist said was that in some cultures, they believe the same chakra, which means your same kind of body energy, the same chakra for creativity and sexuality were the same kind of source. And at that time, I was kind of approaching art as a hobby, but I had a deep kind of craving. And I realized, and part of it was fear and part of it was recognition, that if I didn't change who I was and how I was around art, that I would become more at risk for acting out sexually or somehow taking stress that I would have in my life and kind of craving the touch in other ways. I mean, it scared me, you know, and I realized that I have to take this serious. I have to take serious this particular dimension, and I spent the next 6 years working half-time as a pastor and half-time as an artist. And I say that in part because I wonder what the consequences are in terms of touch, of being cut off from hands-on kinds of experiences. Like I said, it's a very, you might say, loose, sobering association, and I certainly would never go very far with that analogy, but that realization about creativity and touch, it was a very sobering thing for me and one that I took very serious and made very significant changes in the way I approached my life. So those are ways in which art has made a significant change in the way I, you know, the way I work. And I have other, you know, examples, but those are the ones that feel kind of closest to home tonight anyways, in terms of impact. So we'll just kind of go around and then at some point we'll hear from other folks too.
My name is Sarah Forth, and this week I've been working in the area of religion and literature. So I approach what I'm going to say more as a critic rather than a practitioner of an art, unless you want to talk about the art of reading. And that's something of what I've been teaching. I work with literature, but I don't want you to think that I mean just literature. I mean, you know, narrative, storytelling, really, stories. I think I come to love stories because I grew up in a storytelling family. And I learned the power of stories because I well remember how I, as a child, my father would put me to bed and tell me stories about when he was a little boy growing up in Chicago. He grew up there, lived there. My family went back to live there late in the 40s when I was born. But then we moved when I was 2 years old. But I always heard these Chicago stories. Well, fast forward about 30 years, and I ended up back in Chicago as a graduate student, and I had a very odd feeling that I had been there before, as indeed I had, I mean, as a child but with no distinct memories, but I had inhabited this narrative landscape all of those years, so that I knew from the Art Institute and Marshall Fields and the zoo and Michigan Avenue, and some those things were distinctly familiar to me in a very particular way. And I think that came from the power of those stories. So one of the things that I learned about stories is how they create relationship. In that case, it was a relationship between me and a place, but it was also a relationship between me and my family. It was weaving this narrative fabric in which I was embedded, and which gave me meaning and sense in my life. In a more academic sense, I think I cling to and crave story for the ways that they teach me by providing models, by providing a certain glimpse of a process of learning and growing, and also by how they stretch my imagination. I came to work with literature really from a background in New Testament. That's what my master's degree was from. And I really just transferred all those exegetical skills into the stories in the way I sort of tease apart meaning and revel in the imagery of an artist's work. And I discovered that what I'm doing is very much akin to what I used to do with biblical stories, in the sense of trying to find some sense of solutions for questions that I have. How to love God, how to love your neighbor, how to be a good person, and how to find the strength to be a good person. I think it's that models are one thing, and sometimes the models are negative models. Like yesterday we were dealing with a book by Margaret Atwood, and the character in it was someone who was distinctly negative model in the way she assumed innocence and refused to get involved in what was going on around her. More positively, there's the kind of process that I've learned. This week we looked at one of Paula Marshall's novels, and there's a very distinct process that was depicted with an African-American woman moving from bondage to false values to liberation, both personal and within the and being able to enact that liberation on behalf of the community. And it was a very distinct process where she was alienated from the false values, and she grieved her loss and raged and confessed her sin, and then and sort of acquired this reconnection with her family. And I think about that a lot as I'm working through whatever process I might be going through. It is always remarkable to me that whatever piece I'm working on, how it reflects back to me situations in my own life in very distinct ways. And the last thing I want to say about the power of story for me has to do with imagination and how it pushes me to new places in my thinking. It's sort of like exercising a certain muscle. I've been saying to my class all week that I was very impressed by hearing an interview with one of the Catholic priests who works with Latino youth in East LA, who said, you know, when you can't envision a future for yourself, the present isn't very compelling. And of course, the byproduct of people who live in presents that aren't very compelling is crime and violence and drugs and guns and teenage suicide and teenage pregnancy. And so thinking about the importance of being able to envision a future, and that that stories for me are that sort of training of the imagination, and encourage me to keep imagining a different possibility, because stories are very dynamic. They're not static. They don't offer just answers, but they lead me into possible ways of being or solutions. So that's what I know about stories.
Well, I'm Linda Allen, and I'm co-director of the Northwest Center for Art and Community, and I've been a songwriter and a performer for about, can you all hear me? Okay. For about 25 years. And the bulk of my own songwriting and a theme through most of my performances has had to do with women's lives, women's stories, and history and social justice issues. So I take seriously a quote, and I only remember it loosely, by Bertolt Brecht, which said, art should not be a mirror to reflect society, but a hammer to shape it. And I think that's been a guiding principle of the art that I've sought to create. I always felt that in the decision to become a musician, although I paid my dues in a lot of bars and places like that and learning my trade, I always felt that if the music was just entertainment, this was not what I was choosing to do. That I was choosing to hone my skills so that my music could be a tool for social change. And if it were not that, then I would choose some other occupation. So it's always been very intentional with me. And I think part of why it became, or why I realized the power of it, was that I came to this music in the 60s and the 70s, and I realized that so much of my politics and moral vision came not through the history books, or it came through the music. It came through these incredibly powerful songs that were in the genre of folk music that I was hearing all around me and committing to memory and singing myself. And some of them were incredibly powerful statements, which caused me to evaluate a whole lot of assumptions I had not done before. And again, just to really reaffirm what you were saying about the power of the story, always the most powerful songs to me seemed to come from a first-person narrative. It was taking on a character, it was becoming that character, and it was telling a story in such a way that I suddenly had an insight into that person's life. I suddenly was able to empathize. And I think it was not just the story that was well told, but it was coupled with music. That music had a way of going straight to the heart and just cutting through everything. And I still think, I still believe in the power of that music. And even though folk music is not the popular genre anymore, it's still out there. There are amazing and wonderful songs being written that have a way of, well, for instance, if you have an issue like homelessness, you can read all kinds of statistics in literature and think you have some understanding. But if you're listening to the story, if you're sitting across the table from a homeless woman who is telling you about her life and her struggle, suddenly you're hearing it on a whole different level. Your attention is suddenly somewhat riveted. And you couple that story with music, which is the art form that I've chosen, then it really becomes very powerful. And I think I've seen this again and again, not only in the way that I have been affected, but in the way that I see how some of the songs I've written have been used as tools. And some of the songs may be about a pioneer woman crossing the prairies or crossing overland by wagon train in the 1860s. And how many of us really began to understand what that was like? I began to understand when I started reading journals, personal accounts of that journey, and then putting it into a song in which I felt I could reach a broader perspective of non-readers, of people who don't necessarily read women's history books. And again, the feedback was, gee, I never thought, your story sounded like my great-grandmother. It sounded like someone I would have known. And the same if you talk about the songs that, well, what about Sarajevo? And I think the media has been so extensive, it's been hard to feel it. So one of the songs I've written that people seem to resonate with, or I have a lot of feedback on, was just a woman from the perspective of a victim of the bombing in Sarajevo. I think the artist's job in the community is to enter into everyday life. I think the topic was what we can learn from art that can help us in everyday life. It helps us break out of our own narrow perspectives, which we all carry within us. It helps us to bring us into community, not only the community of the people around us, but in the broader, the world community, to help provide some kind of a vision for the future, because I agree, without the artist to provide that vision, I think we are such a poor society. I think it's art's ability to touch us, to transform us, to connect us to the joys and the struggles of people, as I said, not only immediately around us, but all around. And not only those present, but those who've gone before, as I said, to gain some understanding in what the lives were like of people who lived before. All this, art has always done and must continue to do. So I think if I were to put any injunction on this, it would be to please think of ways to support, to encourage those artists in your community who carry forth that moral vision. There's all kinds of art, and I think it's all important, but the kind of art that most interests me is art that does bring forth, set forth a vision that helps touch our lives. And I hope we can all, in some way, find ways to support it, because the way things are going, it's very difficult for artists to survive these days. And we need them.
I'm Lisa Johnson, and I did mine last night. And when I was asked to do this today, I spent a little time thinking of how I would even begin to talk about what I do, because as a mime, and just as myself, I'm learning how to be a mime. I don't have any mentors or any people who around me do mime for me to bounce off ideas, get support, you know, whatever. Mime is just such a rare art form that there's none of us out there. So in a way, I feel like I'm out there learning how to be a mime, pioneering my way, going through the obstacles and trying to find a way to present it to an audience to not only just create an experience for them, but also learn what is it that they are experiencing so that I can bring that even more and more. And my experience has been, when I first started doing mime, I did it kind of as a, I don't know how to explain it. It was like a sense that I had, or a sensitivity to express something non-verbally. And for years, I was sort of, you know, kind of pursued by this, and I felt like I needed to take a class and learn something and see where it would go, and it grew, and it just so happened that different teachers were there at just the right time, different people in my life at the right time. And they were with me as support, and one thing led to the next until I found myself studying with a very good teacher and got in a position of, you know, being out there on stage, which I never really thought I would do as I had done. Now that I've done this for 15 years, or at least it was 15 years ago that I actually did my first mime, I look back on it thinking of how it first started and going, wow, that was just a journey. I mean, it's kind of like, in the beginning I didn't know what would happen, but it has been a journey, and it's been a faith experience for me to see almost like a leading from one setting to another setting, another setting, another setting. And as I've progressed, I think I've found that I'm learning a respect for the creative process in terms of it being a transforming process. One of the things I'm learning as a mime is to get into a space of being so silent inside that it's like it's a blank canvas, and what I'm receiving is like, you know, just little impulses and senses that I intuit and try and follow and just see what comes out of it. And I'm learning, you know, as I'm performing too, that music is a real beginning point for my creativity, because it's the music that will carry just a phrase or just an image, and that image will be, for me, a visual image. And with that visual in mind, then something starts creating a story. One of the things that I've really enjoyed about mime compared to, let's say, dance, is mime has a story that you can see a beginning, middle, end. And there's something about that that, for some reason, I needed that structure. Compared to dance, where it's been just sort of all over, you get the feelings, but where's the story? And so, as I present my mime, and as I hope other people are picking up on the story, I think one of the things that happens in their experience is that they're given a chance to, let's say, be presented with a puzzle. Like, what is that? And what is that? And what is that? And how does that come together? And then when they finally get that piece, it's like suddenly, oh, I got it. And it's like they got it. You know, they had a chance to discover what the storyline was about, and when they get it, they feel that sense of, I got it, now I understand. They not only got what the storyline was, but what the message was too. So it's sort of a way of, you know, putting the message out there without telling them what to think of it. Which is good, because I think that's really the way creativity is, and I think that's the way that, you know, life is. I mean, God created us in freedom to think through things and come to realizations ourselves, and I think that's a real important part of what we as artists do, is we, in freedom, create and offer something, and then people who are viewing in freedom choose their own perspective, and they put it together for their own life meaning, and each of us has our own perspective on anything, you know, for this kind of art. So anyway, I guess the thing that I would want to just state for my statement here is just that I think the thing that I'm learning about creativity is that process of the receptivity and the silence. And it is like just waiting for something that I don't see, or that is behind something that I'm looking for, and it comes on its own.
I'm Barbara Sittler. I'm on the teaching staff, and this week I'm teaching neurobiology and aging, which is what I'm studying these days. Next week I'm teaching on theology and food, which is what I've been doing. Food is what I've been doing for 20 years. I've been a professional chef for 20 years. And it's first of all very nice to be considered an artist as a chef, because frequently you're not. But to be a chef is to be an artist. And that has made an enormous difference in my life. There's a lot that I could say about being able to have art come into my hands as easily as it has. That's one thing. But what it has meant to me in terms of my life is that I came from a very academic family. I came from a very intellectual family. And I was not an intellectual. And once I discovered, or it was discovered for me, other people told me that I had a talent and I should use it, and I was very much promoted. I found a wonderful ability, or I found that I had this gift that was given to me. And it was something that I really didn't have to think about, I just had to do. And the less I thought about it, in a sense, the better I could do it. And it was a completely whole, engaging process. It has always been that way, that I just could look at food and know that went with this, and I could play with it this way, and I've never been able to exactly explain it, but I've been able to cook really well. And I don't see that as something that I've studied and thought about and worked out clearly and analytically. Gift, and it's been a sort of a serendipitous occasion for me. What that's meant for me was, it, as a younger person, it gave me an awful lot of confidence in who I was and in what it was to create. And I began to see that creating was not an intellectual exercise, but that it was a very engaging exercise, and it was something that when it went well, you just knew it. It just went well. I've taken that knowledge or that experience of just being able to do things well, and I've applied it to other areas in my life. Now I've moved from being a chef, or I've added to my being a chef by studying now. But I've carried with me the knowledge that things, when they're going well, when you are engaged, when the materials, be they peppers and butter and garlic and cilantro and basil and pasta, or ideas and words and concepts or people or ethical principles, when you are engaged with them, and there is a creative interaction, there is essentially no difference whether it's food or whether it's ideas. There is a process that's going on, and you have to study it, you have to learn it, you have to work with it, but you're not battling against it. And that has given me the ability to move, sort of, in addition to cooking, to move into other areas of life that have been equally rewarding and creative. And so that experience of almost being overtaken by this art form, by this creative ability that I really didn't plan and couldn't orchestrate, has been very helpful for me in determining what else I was going to do and how I was going to do it. I have a great deal more confidence in just the flow of material, the flow of ideas, the sort of the flow of inspiration and creativity. That's one thing that this art has done in helping my life. What it has also done is that, in general, people who work in kitchens are not highly educated people. Restaurant business is pretty brutal, and there's always, it's a business. It's not a museum, it's not a performance, it's a business. And the bottom line is always, we've got to make a profit, and so where the cutting comes is in personnel. So you generally will have someone who's pretty accomplished, a pretty good chef, a pretty well-known chef who you're going to pay a lot of money to, and a lot of other people who are working in that kitchen who are not skilled much, who don't have a lot of options, who don't have a lot of education. They're sort of the worker bees. And what I have been able to do, because the creative opportunity came and surprised me so much when I was younger. I was so happy to find out that even though I was not an intellectual, I was able to do something that was deeply meaningful to me. I've been able to see that in the people who have worked for me and foster whatever spirit of creativity they may have, and identify that in the people who have worked for me and give them some encouragement and some hope, and to show them that artistry also exists in them. And I think it has made a real big difference in the lives of a number of people who have worked for me. They have seen that their work, their daily work, has something that not only comes to an end, 16 filet mignon went out, or they've stuffed 27 quail by 4 o'clock or whatever, but that they've done it really well. They've had some interesting ideas. They've seen the material in front of them as something that they have a relationship with, and that they have often an ability with it, and they have been able to move up into the creative process themselves and become creators themselves. And there's nothing like it. There is absolutely nothing like seeing somebody realize they've got it. And not everybody does. I mean, few people do. But when you see it, and when you have the opportunity to help somebody get it,
it changes the life, your life, it changes their life, it changes the whole tension of the place, the process. It is a wonderful, wonderful experience. And so I see part of what art has given me is the opportunity to be a teacher and to sort of let that trickle down and play as it has played with me and freed me to now consider being an artist with words or with ideas. It's also allowed me to see how it is to be an artist with people and their insides too.
Before we open it up, I'm wondering maybe the three of us could move around this way a little bit so that you're back. Lisa in particular isn't to the group. If you want to come up here.
Barb, you can do that too. Just come on the other side.
Yeah, you want to come on? I mean, I still want to stay at the end here, though.
Oh, sorry, pal. Surrounded by women. Yeah.
I saw that coming when the list was developed. Yeah. Well, I guess as I'm listening to this group, certainly one thing I'm struck by is people have been impacted by art, and then it seems like it's a pretty spontaneous response in terms of how it facilitates change in their life. Other responses and or other stories?
Comment?
Yeah.
As I was thinking about this and really enjoying the comments, I couldn't help but think that I would have hoped, in retrospect, or would have wanted this discussion to be the role of art in the religious community, in effect. We just spent a year in Berkeley, and one of the issues that that came up in the GTU, the religious environment, was the role of arts ministries. This is a big topic. What is the relationship with art and community? And as I was listening to everybody, I realized that I couldn't argue with any of the things that were said, and was just in agreement with everything. I mean, really, basically, the idea that art fosters your sense of self and the storylines that you tell yourself and other people and your children, and how important that is in sort of understanding a transcendental quality to your life. But as I was thinking about that in terms of the religious community, I realized that I think the religious community has a lot of trouble with that when it interfaces with the idea of God. You know, a couple of mentions were made to God. But what does the idea, what does all of the, quote, New Age, which is oftentimes how it's labeled, but, or self-understanding ideas that we all live with, how does that interface, and how does the religious community perceive that? And I think the problem I have with the religious establishment, our denominations and so forth, is that we're suspicious of that. Where does God fit into all of that? And I would like to hear some comments and some thoughts about that, because I don't have any answers, but I have been able to become aware of the problem. A lot of people want to take their art into the churches and are finding a lot of resistance or a lot of insensitivity to it. Everybody appreciates good music, it seems, in the churches. As long as it's basically, quote, religious music. We appreciate a certain modicum of visual art, as long as it's not too wild, you know. But when art moves into the realms that we were talking about here, the realm of folk music, the realm of mime, dance is beginning to be recognized, I think, a little bit more. But there's still a sense that it's a peripheral thing. It's not integral to God, somehow. And so I'd like to hear some comments about that.
I've certainly been working with that issue for a long time. And the one story that comes to mind that for me makes it a ministry, I remember I was working at giving this retreat, and when I use my potter's wheel, I often have a volunteer who comes up and makes a piece. And in this particular case, the piece collapsed, and the woman, you know, made another one. And at the same time that this all was happening, there was somebody else in the group that was crying. And later on, I asked her, now why were you upset or sad? And she said that she was a concert pianist and always felt that the audience wanted her to fail or would criticize her. And what she saw was that when this person failed, you might say, she got a lot of support and nurturing and an opportunity to start over. So that experience spoke to that particular woman. And what was amazing for me is I got to watch all of this. You know, in other words, there was something happening here that was more than me. I had a particular part in it. But I was a participant in something larger than myself. And in some ways, I think art has, for me, brought that kind of humility to ministry. I hear too many people, you know, when I say church folks or pastors, trying to get that one-to-one correlation. You know, what can I say that's going to change your life? You know, and I think when you're an artist, you get to the place of putting things out there, and how people use it, you know, to change their lives is not only a mystery, but it's very interesting. If you don't get over-invested or overly responsible for facilitating that change. So I do agree that somehow artists may have almost let go so much that they're really never asking, you know, how does this experience speak to you in a way that reflects a larger message either from God or your faith system, or how does it, you know, what do you do with this experience that somehow confirms what we believe as a community? So I can kind of see how, you know, how the misunderstandings occur, because like I said, one of the things about being an artist is it's just kind of fun creating things. So I mean, so it's kind of, it's easy just to kind of get into, you know, to putting it out and not really kind of stepping back and saying, now what are people doing with this experience? But I think there's a healthy balance there, because I know that it's made my work much more enjoyable if I approach what I do with a willingness to be surprised about what people do with what I say or do, whether it's art or workshops that I give. But I know my training in the beginning was, you know, what 3 points can I make to you to get, you know, to get something across to you? So I think it's kind of changed the way I approach things, and in some ways it's allowed me to see God's activity in people's lives in different ways than I think I did before I became an artist in a more practical sense. Is that helpful in terms of your...
Oh, yeah, that's a good answer.
I'd like to respond to that too, because I find that the church doesn't have a whole lot of use for what I do. Which is very strange when you think of a couple of things. One is that we celebrate the Eucharist, which is this holy feast, and we are celebrating the very fact that God became flesh, and that we are flesh, and that we have to, we must eat to survive, and yet we split ourselves off very much from enjoying that. If we like it too much, we're doing something wrong. You know, food is good for you. Food is to be nutritious. Food is to be eaten in moderation. And you're not supposed to like it too much. Well, tell me then why God made raspberries. You know, or red snappers. Or enabled us to work out chocolate mousse. Or champagne. Or Armagnac. Or truffles, or, you know, aged
cheese.
Yeah. So I find that the church has a very strange and distancing relationship with one form of something which is central to our worship and central to our understanding of ourselves as Christians. And
but the church, like, hot dish and jello.
You made my point. So I think there's some interesting work to be done there.
Yeah.
I wonder if part of it isn't the church's discomfort with sensual things.
Absolutely. It's our anthropology. Mm-hmm. Anthropology. It's how we visualize ourselves as human beings in relationship to God. Yeah, I think it's very discomforting.
Well, there certainly are some things about creativity that do make people anxious. And you know, some of it is, well, like I said, some of it I think is the sensuousness of it. Some of it is, it's, I want to say, unpredictability. But in some ways, you know, to me, that's kind of counter-purpose. In other words, if you think about creativity as expression, and if you think about our theology as responding, you know, responses, those are kind of unpredictable. I mean, those are things that are, you know, have that sense of freedom and you know, response. But yet I think there is some anxiety about, well, what will we say or what will happen? I know that part of the difficulty I had in terms of doing some ministry, you know, at one point I started a nonprofit ministry called Creative Spirit Ministries. And, you know, part of the reason it was difficult to get off the ground was it's very difficult to say what's going to happen when you involve yourself in a creative process. And we can become very outcome-oriented. So, you know, you want somebody to talk about grief, you want somebody to talk about this lesson or this book or that book, and, you know, then you want the person to come and kind of end up at that particular place. Where most of the creative process is about expression, and it's about surprise, and it's about the artist participating in that surprise. You know, and so, you know, some of where those trade-offs are, you know, artists probably couldn't do it even if they wanted to. Which, you know, sometimes when I organize a conference, people kind of pick that up about me, like, you know, Jack's not in control of this. You know, and you know, that can, people can pick that up pretty quick, and then, you know, that can either be a good thing or an anxiety producing thing, you know. So I think that's part of, you know, part of it. And in some ways I want to honor some of those concerns. I don't think that artists should be exempt from reflecting on their experience or, you know, talking about what goes on. I don't think people should just blindly, you know, say, go ahead and do it. But I do think that we also don't have to be ashamed or kind of run away from our process either.
I'd be really interested in other responses to the question that Scott raised. From Lisa, from Sarah.
Well, for me, it's a personal thing, you know, it's like, how does art communicate God? I mean, if that's the question, it's, I don't know, I just feel like, it's a mystery. I mean, it's a mystery how any of us are creative, and it's a mystery for us to learn from, and the same with God. I mean, there's so much about God we don't understand, and I don't know, it just seems like maybe it's uncomfortable not being able to put it in better terms, but it just seems like, you know, the whole process of creativity is something not to, sometimes not to define so much, but just to let happen and just let the experience be what it is. And if you're looking for a message in it, then again, that's for you to look for through your own faith experience. and that's the way that God communicates to you personally, is your response anyway to God of how you are going to respond to something you see in art.
Well, I think I've been a preacher for 25 years. There was not a doubt in my mind that I was called to do what I do. In fact, in 69, I applied to go to seminary and was turned down and became a folk singer instead. It took me a while to understand I was in seminary, and I was. And I did become a preacher. And there was just no doubt. And I feel the songs I write, as some other songwriters have said before me, I don't write, I write them down, because they very much feel like they're channeled through. And it sometimes surprised me that the churches didn't recognize that. That they didn't ordain me or give me a cloak or something, you know, to say, well, of course, this is what she's doing. I even made some forays into the office and say, well, you know, I'm doing ministry. Can't you ordain me to do this? You know? And I don't think I definitely didn't get very far. And the Lutheran Church is certainly not ready for this. However, it's interesting that a good friend of mine, Tom Hunter, who works through the UCC, is exactly what he does, in that he is a songwriter, and he writes on a lot of the same themes that I do, and is recognized, is ordained. I mean, he did happen to get ordained before he did this, but his ministry is recognized as a ministry, which is the main point I wanted to make. So I would love to see. I still think there's so much educating that needs to be done in terms of how the kind of thing that I do fits into a church. And it was not more than a month or two ago that I was asked to sing in a church. And I was giving a little concert after the main service and then doing a few songs in church. And I said, well, what songs would you like? And the guy said, well, you know, something that's appropriate for church. Well, I happen to think anything I do is pretty appropriate for church. But I tried to sort of probe it a little further, and I said, well, what's the lesson on? Because I'd like to find a song that fits. Well, you don't really need to know that. Just do some songs that, you know, that are appropriate for church. And I finally had to kind of go around him and go directly to the pastor and work with him to say, well, this is the theme. Well, good, I've written this song that fits here. And then it was easy, but kind of trying to get through the mindset of what is appropriate for church, for one thing. And to kind of try to break new ground through music is important.
It sounds like that particular music director didn't think of music as really as integral, mm-hmm. as perhaps the pastor did. The pastor That's was right. willing to share that theme with you and really let you integrate it in.
That's right.
I think it does. I want to talk about what art is. I think we have a couple of views of it. As something of excellence, something that you to be almost revered sometimes, if it's especially well done. When I go to the museum and I see one magnificent piece after another, I am left properly awestruck. I see it as performance, but it's hard to identify with. And only secondarily or tertiary, where I think of creativity, I just think of performance, this wonderful thing. But it's apart from the usual. And if there's a really terrific performer, they require a lot of money. And then you sit how many rows back, and again, it's something that's other, something back there that I picked up on what you said, especially about cooking. You know, someone's in the kitchen with, and to be with you, and to participate, and now not just to admire what you do, but to say,
to eat
I think me, I can do this.
Yeah.
And participate in the full sense of eating. Mm-hmm. To be in a room, a small room, where you're just kind of monkeying around, when you're back in college or whatever it is, and for the first time, to be present, for the first time when you were being a mind. This is the very first, or the early time, when you're just playing with it. And then we're all a part of it. And we're not just 20 rows back or 100 rows back. And we're watching you struggle with whatever it is and then overcome or partially overcome it. Now that's creativity. And I can not only admire it when you do it, but when you come up with a song and you fit something together that fits us. You know, it's a farewell party and you thought, well, Joseph is leaving and I wanted to do this song. Now we're all a part of it. And most churches I know are small, relatively. So to the extent that we talk about creativity in the church, the audiences are small enough, the situation is intimate enough. I think if we'd stop thinking of ourselves as stars or potential stars or people are going to end up on a distant concert stage or put their products in museum walls and just bring others along with them, that not only could we advance our own creativity, but who knows what other creativity we might unearth or approach.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good note to end on, particularly the idea of participation. In some ways, part of the way I understand the clergy call is that you're set aside in a way so that you can participate with people in their life and their life journey, that you're kind of freed up to do that. And there might be some wisdom in approaching artists in with the same way of participation with them. I mean, there's lots of kind of artists in residence. So I do think that participation is a way of learning both about yourself and about others. I would only disagree in the sense of there must be something within your experience that when you see a fine piece of art, you understand that somehow they've been able to do something. And I don't know if the magic is in something totally separate or the fact that they somehow were able to put all these kind of opposing forces together in a way that says something. And sometimes in life we struggle with, you know, how to put together things that seem, you know, mutually exclusive. And I think there's something about the artist that, you know, can do that. So on that end about, you know, participation, I hope that may be something you take away. You know, how can we have an artist with us in a way that we can participate and learn from that experience, but also letting art speak to you and see what response you get to. So, yeah, thank you.
I'd be interested in those 5-10 minutes just to have these two people ask their questions.
Okay. Well, what I would like to do, if it's fine, is that maybe I'm certainly willing to stick around. People may want to make a transition at this point. You know, so... And I'm not sure, do we need to let go of this room for the film?
I'm fine with waiting.
Okay.
To get this.
Yeah.
I just need help figure out how to turn it off.
Okay.
Writers, of course, have been involved in that for 300 plus years. But for quite a long time, the Quakers prohibited all music and dance from any of their worshippers. The strongest expression I know of the idea that you really concentrate on the spirit and just ignore the flesh. And I hear all of you guys say,